Welcome in this session. Thanks for attending this VDI SmackDown presentation. 75 minutes full packed with VDI goodness. My name is Ruben Spruit. I'm the CTO of a company called PQR. PQR is a system integrator. We are based in the Netherlands in Europe. PQR is focusing on projects, infrastructure projects, focusing on tomorrow's workspace and tomorrow's data center. I'm an MVP, Microsoft MVP. I'm a Citrix CTP and a VMware vExpert. This presentation is my own, my company's presentation. You will see some good, bad, and ugly. You will see some interesting pros and cons of different vendors. And these are all my own opinions. So it's cool to be here on stage at SAGET, talk about competition as well, talk about what's good and bad about Microsoft VDI solution, for instance. I'm proud to be Dutch. I live in Holland, in the Netherlands. This is what we normally eat every day, these healthy stroopwafels. This is what we have. We have more bicycles in the Netherlands than citizens. And this is what we do when we celebrate the victory of soccer. We dress like this, and we make funny pictures of all that. This is a typical countryside, tulip fields, bulb fields, and yeah, that's a nice start of this cool session. So the objectives of this session are pretty simple. I want to start with some drama, and the session objectives are 10 points to implement VDI correctly, good, bad, and ugly, and storage design is pretty bad and ugly. We'll see that later on. Developments in application and desktop delivery, and how VDI solutions compare with each other. Microsoft, Citrix, and VMware are being considered in that space right now. So right now, in the Netherlands, in Europe, in the world, there are quite some challenges. When you look at business, from a business perspective to challenges, you will see you can create a word cloud like this. Business people want to have anywhere access to applications and data. They want a lower cost. They don't want to have products. They want to have solutions. And also, in some degree, the perception from business to IT is that IT is being considered as the Dr. No organization, something like that. And that's challenging. Challenging is also choices. There are a lot of choices in the technology space. When you look at hosted desktops running on the client. When you look at Windows, when you look at Google, when you look at Android, when you look at application virtualization, when you look at, well, there are a lot of choices in this space. I love this space. It's cool to investigate all these choices and help customers making the smart decisions on that. They are the business consumers, the end users. They have a mindset called consumerization of IT. And they have the following, message to us as IT pros.
I want it all. I want it all. I want it all. And I want it now.
Well, that can keep us awake after some lunch, I assume. This is my favorite rock band when I was, a couple of years ago, something like that. So challenges are there, and challenges are cool as well, because you can help solving these challenges with a lot of knowledge. And I want to use this time to share my knowledge with you around VDI. So how can we solve these challenges? It's focusing on me. And me is not Ruben living in Veenendaal, having three kids, but me is the business consumer in different roles. And me, the business consumer, he will tell something like, it's not about Apple or Google or Microsoft with all this greatness or devices or apps, but it is about me. How can I do my job better? And the service is a nice device. The philosophy is cool, but it's about, okay, how can we make it happen that the end user is more productive, for instance? So solving these challenges is also about strategy. Strategy in the application and desktop delivery space. VDI is a portion in application and desktop delivery. An application and desktop delivery is all about how do I deliver applications and desktops, Windows, web, and mobile applications on different platforms to my end users. And applications are needed to access data. So it's more about data than application, from my perspective. For this presentation, I won't cover the whole application and desktop delivery space. We had a small conversation about other solutions, which are very interesting, but more focusing on the client side. This session is focusing on the server-hosted desktop space, VDI, virtual desktop infrastructure. Keep in mind that this talk is about VDI, but every organization, small and big, will have a hybrid application and desktop delivery infrastructure. It is rich client, it is server hosted. Could be session host, could be VDI. Could be managed, could be unmanaged, could be bring your own, IT owns. Online, offline, applications installed, applications virtualized, and so on. So the structure of the following 70 minutes is about what are the 10 points to implement VDI correctly. I will talk about the especially bad and ugly about VDI. I won't spend time on the good portion of VDI. I will spend around 15 minutes on storage and VDI. Talk about 4 or 5 minutes around developments I see in the VDI space. And then use the additional time, the other time, for VDI solution overview. Citrix, Microsoft, VMware, remote desktop clients for Microsoft only. What's new in 2012 R2 from a remote desktop service perspective, and a little bit what's new with Zen Desktop 7. That's being covered at the end of this presentation. So that's the structure for this session. So 10 points to implement VDI correctly. First point is, what do you want to achieve? A very simple question. VDI. Why VDI? What's the reason for that? A lot of customers of PQR think, well, VDI is the way to go. But it's a way to go, not the way. And it's also the main question, okay, what do you want to achieve? Anywhere access, manageability, in some degree more secure environment, for instance, are points in this direction. Reducing cost with VDI is another strategic question. And do you really reduce cost with VDI? I will challenge you if that's really the case. So do the math in your own environment when you want to focus on cost reduction and you think, well, VDI is the way to go. Focusing on other point, third point, is what's the vision of Microsoft or Citrix or Dell or VMware, for instance. So what's the vision of these vendors? Understand what any means. Any OS, any browser, any connection, anyone, any device, any application, and you can create your own any. Understand that it's hybrid all over the place. Understand in the VDI strategy that VDI is a segment in application and desktop delivery. Application and desktop delivery is a set of solutions, and VDI is a subset of that solution set. Who is the owner of a VDI strategy, and what is his reason to be owner of that strategy is the sixth point. And who, more from an IT pro perspective, who is in a team? Networking guys, storage guy, client OS guys, application guys, people who are front facing with the end users itself, they should be part of the strategy team for implementing VDI. Who understands storage? One of the simple questions I ask my customers, okay, what is the storage capacity available when I'm doing a VDI project? And when they say, okay, I have around 3 terabytes available, and that's the only thing they mention, then they understand, okay, there's education needed, because it's not only about capacity like terabytes or gigabytes, but also something else. I will cover that later. And maybe the most important one is focusing on user experience. How can we make the user happy with the VDI solution? And what is his perceived performance as well? Perceived performance is all about communication. That's not an IT thing. But perception and perceived performance is critical in every client project, every client or desktop virtualization project. And then do your own reality check on solutions. Don't believe only the good stories of whatever. These are my 10 points to be successful. Just simple. I can talk for a couple of hours of a good strategy, but I just want to have some 10 points I want to share with you. How can you be successful in VDI? There are three key points on that. Have a profound vision what you want to achieve. Understand how you can do it. So execution is critical. And understand that adoption is very critical. So vision, execution, and adoption are all three combined. When one of these three is not in place, chances are high that VDI project will fail. When there's no adoption from the end user, stop with implementing, because it is focusing on the end user. Now we'll spend some time about the good, bad, and ugly. And I've presented good, bad, and ugly a couple of times. And one of the, I think it was a year ago, something like that, two people in the audience afterwards came to me. I have no peep idea why people are using VDI, because you spend quite some time on the bad and ugly portion. It should be really bad, something like that. Well, and I mentioned, okay, I won't spend time on a good portion because ask the vendors, ask other customers why VDI is a good solution. And right now I will spend time on the bad and ugly portion of VDI. So no good portion in VDI, ask someone else about good. I will spend time on the bad and ugly portion. But bad and ugly sounds dramatic, like woo, ah, something like that. But bad and ugly is also attention, not only like bad and ugly. But it sounds cool to have good, bad, and ugly. So focus is VDI, and for me this is an awesome picture of good. And this is a typical bad and ugly picture. I have no clue if this is allowed in the US. This is allowed to drive in the Netherlands. And I educated my kids, I have three kids, that this is not the most brilliant car. That's my personal opinion. So exactly when my daughter of three was driving with me and she saw this car and she was three, I said, well, Dad, that's an ugly car, right? And I smiled like, I made it cool. So bad and ugly, couple of points. Bad and ugly, again, is attention. Attention with VDI is about user experience. User experience is one of the two topics which are critical in VDI. Voice, webcam, unified communications, voice over IP solutions in VDI can work and works, but it's about the context. What is the endpoint? What is the network impact? What type of endpoint is being used? What type of unified communication software is being used? Just some simple examples, and then the answer will vary. So yes, Link 2013 is supported and works. But ask the same question with older versions of Link, for instance, in VDI. What is the supportability and does it work? And when the answer is yes, it works, then the next question is, okay, what is supported and what works? Is it just chat and presence and that these kind of things, or also audio and video? Rich media, playback of rich media can be challenging depending, for instance, on the endpoint. Endpoint support is critical. 3D graphics, 2D graphics can be a challenge. Yes, there are solutions in this space who can solve resource-intensive applications. Attention is also overall cost reduction of the complete technology stack. To implement VDI, you have a pretty substantial stack of solutions to implement it. It's hypervisor, it's storage, it's networking happening in a data center. It's cloud, it's management solutions, it's image management, it's secure access and secure networking, it's endpoints, it's a client OS. So the technology stack can be pretty complex. Licensing can be challenging as well. And I created an interesting graph to explain Microsoft licensing. And marketing of Microsoft Game and Play, and so well, that can be much simpler. We should create our own graph. So I won't spend time on licensing and explain licensing. That's not my real topic. But licensing, so Windows client licensing, but also Office licensing, for instance, as an application set running in VDI, is attention, and especially in a bring-your-own-device scenario. So this presentation, this deck, is available for download, so you can find out yourself with this simple diagram what type of licensing, software assurance, virtual desktop access, companion licensing, what type of licensing fits in your organization. HTML5, as a standard, quote-unquote, in a browser, can be used to get remote access to the VDI solution. I will cover that later on as well. The skill and mindset of the IT organization should be different. Just patching a desktop in a VDI scenario where 10,000 of users are running VDI in a central infrastructure can be quite challenging from a storage perspective. Just update the VMs. Well, that can be very dangerous. Understand what the impact is of VDI in such a data center environment. I mentioned before, perceived performance is critical in a successful VDI implementation. Some people think that endpoints are not exciting, or are exciting. Depends on how you look at it. Well, when you look at all the lines to get to services, it seems that these endpoints are pretty exciting. Could be the price. I'm not sure what the real reason is, or the awesome device. But endpoints are exciting in VDI. Some people think, well, everything is happening in a data center, so the endpoint doesn't matter anymore. Well, the endpoint matters from a user experience perspective. Yes, with Windows clients, you will have a great user experience. When you move to, for instance, OS X or iOS or Android, the experience can be different because, for instance, a Citrix receiver or a third-party RDP client running on that platform has different behavior. Although everything is running in a data center and optimized and tuned and blah, 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 the endpoint has still impact in the user experience and the perceived performance. So I talked about the drama, a little bit of Queen in there. To solve challenges, and solving challenges is focusing on me as a business consumer. I mentioned 10 strategic points to implement VDI successfully. I talked about the bad and ugly. I didn't talk about the good portion of VDI, as I mentioned before. One of the bad points or attention points in VDI is storage impact. And there's already a lot of content covered during TechEd around storage and VDI, but I think it's still wise to talk about storage and VDI. And it's pretty interesting to see that today, 2 hours ago, a new white paper is finished. We spent 30 days on research on a white paper called Understanding the Impact of Storage in VDI. That's, in essence, the name of that white paper. And that says it all. That white paper will be available. I will explain later how you get your hands on that white paper. But understanding VDI in storage is critical for us or your colleagues while implementing or thinking about implementing VDI. So VDI in storage is the next topic. VDI in storage is serious impact. Can be very positive from a performance perspective or really dramatic. Simple example, in the early days, like 6 years ago, when we did the first big VDI implementations as a system integrator within PQR, we didn't have all these numbers like Microsoft or the hardware vendors are offering. We only had lab tests. And this slide is all about IOPS, in and output operations per second. And in lab tests, it's like 90% of the IOs are read and 10% of the IOs are writes. But in real-world scenarios or good benchmark scenarios like we are using within Project VRC, we see the complete opposite. 80%, 90% of the IOs are rights, and 20% of the IOs are reads. And when you use these numbers and you calculate what you need for storage, you will screw up when you do the opposite. And that's what we've seen 4 or 5 years ago in production. And we didn't have other numbers. Nowadays, numbers are there. People are presenting on these kind of topics. So you understand it's about read and writes. Reads are easy to cache, read cache. Writes are tough to cache, limited because the amount of cache you have. Other topic is the write penalty. So the RAID level, is it RAID 1, RAID 5, RAID 0, which is not a real brilliant idea in production, and the impact on IOs from a write penalty. So when I'm just writing one IO to a storage system, could be local, could be central, and my storage system is configured as RAID 1, you will have one IO is two IOs to a storage perspective. So understand write penalty. Understand different disk types, ATA, SES, or SCSI, for instance, and the impact this has from a block size and a throughput size. ATA drives, a normal VDI solution in production has the majority of the IO block sizes are 4K blocks. Understand the impact when you move to other drives. Understand the latency of these drives. Lower latency means happy users. Happy user, me like me on this on my laptop, SS3 has lower latency. No magnetic disk, no head moving around, for instance. So lower latency is better. Above 20 milliseconds latency is people will complain. So you won't go above 20 milliseconds latency. Also, different disk types, so SATA, 10K SAS, 15K drives, have impact on latency as well. So you'll see here that a 50K drive can handle around 200 IOs, an average drive, with 4K blocks. So I can write down, and I've written down, it's netto IOPS table. So what's the rate penalty? What type of drives are you using? And what's the netto IO impact for this disk set? Just a simple calculation. I have 1,000 concurrent users. 30% of the IOs are read, 70% of the IOs are writes, and I'm consuming 20 IOs sustained. Yes, I have peaks, especially in the beginning, booting up machines, logging on, starting applications. So you need to handle that as well. But 20 IOPS is an average user. That's a dangerous sentence, by the way, to have an average user, because there are no averages. I've seen customers in production running 2,000 CCUs with around 200 applications in production, and they consume around 3 IOPS sustained during the day. It's a government organization, not sure if that's bound to that type of number. Could be in typical Dutch, I'm not sure. I've seen healthcare organizations as well with just one application consuming 50 IOs for one user. So it's all about the application, and you should be aware that you should measure the IO impact up front before you design. When I have a RAID 1 disk set, I need 128 disks, spindles, 15K SAS drives to handle this load. When I have a RAID 5 SIP system, disk SIP system, I need 210 spindles to handle this load. So don't use your current disk and storage architecture and just say, well, I have enough capacity, use VDI, it should work. It will work for a couple of users, maybe 50, maybe 100, but when you ramp up, shit will hit the fan. That's what we've seen in production, and user will complain like, it doesn't work anymore, something like that. So understand that you cannot use your current disk and storage strategy for VDI per se. I mentioned a couple of minutes ago that when you start your VMs, you boot your VM, sorry, and you log on and you start your applications, most of the IOs are read IOs. When I'm really using applications, the ratio will shift and the IOs mostly will be write IOs. Again, IOs, read IOs can be easily cached. Cluster shared volume is a read cache. IntelliCache is a read cache. Content-based read cache from VMware is a read cache. Reads are easy to cache. Every vendor, storage vendor, has read cache. There's read cache on my control as well, and there's write back cache as well. But that's limited in the amount of memory I have on these controllers. Well, is this it? You think, well, after lunch, I'm done with all this storage thing. We thought within PQR that we know storage and VDI a couple of years ago because we learned the hard way. And we wrote about it and we evangelized about it as well. So in production, we had another customer. We had serious issues. And I will explain these issues. And these issues have everything to do with a lunch storm. And I will explain what a lunch storm is. So is there more? Yes, there's much more around storage and VDI. This is a typical office backend server workload. You see different type of block sizes, 64K blocks, 8K blocks, 1 megabyte blocks, read and writes. This is a typical VDI profile we see. The majority is 4K blocks, and the majority is writes and not reads. Yes, during start, we have like more read IOs and less write IOs. So it's interesting to see that what's the IO peaks for that. Understand boot storms, log on storms, and steady state. I already covered that. A lot of people think it's all about IOs. But actually, it's not. Yes, understanding the impact of IOs and having enough IOs is very important. I explained it in the calculation. So just buying a nice, awesome Fusion IO interface, which will handle all the IO discussion, is an interesting approach. But it's important to understand that this awesome interface will cost a lot of money as well. I need IOs, and I need capacity from a gigabyte, from a storage perspective. And that finding that balance is quite challenging. So focusing only on IOs is just a portion of the discussion. It's IOs and capacity, and that should be in balance. Some people think, well, okay, just 2 gigabytes, or maybe 3, is enough for each VM. Or just do a simple exercise when you're home and print a simple presentation of 5 megabytes. See what happens on your spooler file for a certain moment. That 5 megabyte or 10 megabyte presentation can create a 1 gigabyte spooler file in a certain moment. You need to have that capacity, for instance. Just a simple example, and there are around 15 to 20 of this type of examples, which emphasize it's not only about IOs, but I need capacity as well. This is what I call the lunch storm. This typical customer was running Windows XP a couple of years ago in VDI, and for some reason, during lunch, the whole storage system collapsed. What happened? People were using YouTube, nothing wrong with that. And YouTube behavior is creating, in this example, 240K blocks instead of normal 4K blocks. 240K blocks is just one IO from a guest VM perspective. But from a storage perspective, this IO, this 240K blocks is chunked in 4K blocks because the IO, the storage system wants 4K blocks. The heads of the storage controller were really, really overwhelmed. And at the end of the day, I didn't have enough IOs from a storage perspective on the storage side. How can we solve this? Well, it's not easy to solve because it's just the behavior of YouTube or an FTP application or that type of applications. Keep in mind, keep block sizes in mind as well compared to applications. So how can I solve this whole storage discussion from an IO perspective and from a capacity perspective? That's a very interesting question. And I've written down a couple of scenarios which can be helpful in solving storage and VDI. Simple scenario is just buy more disks / spindles. Other scenario is just minimize the I/O impact from OS and application perspective. We've done some investigation from a project VRC perspective, how to tune and optimize Windows XP and Windows 7. We are in the middle of the process of finding new tuning tips for Windows 8 and see the impact of these as well. But at the end of the day, in a certain amount of time, you're done with tuning, and that's it. You need to cope with that. Our topic is understand caching technologies, understand read and write cache, understand solid-state drives. SSDs are in different flavors. Consumer-focused, we have consumer-focused SSDs in our laptops. Understand the impact of MLC, SLC, and TLC solid-state drives. What does it mean from price? What does it mean for performance? What does it mean for endurance? It's not that easy just to buy some SSDs and you're done. Storage problem solved. There are solutions in the market who are consolidating IOs, who are deduplicating IOs. Consolidating IOs, Atlantis, for instance, is such a solution. NetApp, in a certain degree, is such a solution. Other vendors are there as well. Understand there are solutions in this space. Verso and NetApp, for instance, have a software stack, NetApp software stack, which handles random write IOs and make from these random write IOs sequential write IOs. And my spindle can handle much more sequential writes than random writes. Auto-tiering, one of the features in R2, can be, didn't spend time yet on R2 and auto-tiering, but can be very handy with solving storage in VDI. And also memory solutions, like I mentioned before with Fusion.io, or the other 99 vendors in this space, because this is really a crowded space right now, is a very interesting approach as well. I can spend a workshop time, 3-4 hours, in different vendor solutions. That's not my goal for this presentation. One of the white papers I mentioned is covering a lot of these topics. So you will have some interesting reading material when you're heading home or early next week. So I talked about the good, bad, and ugly. Spent some time about the bad and ugly portion. Spent quite some time on the storage side. Now I want to spend some time on the developments in the VDI space. And this is just a random thought thing. And challenging of random thoughts is that you can spend quite some time with these thoughts. And I want to spend some time on solution overview and VDI SmackDown. So developments I see in VDI space in random order, just my random thoughts, is, for instance, a hyper-converged infrastructure. So you have converged infrastructures like VBlock and FlexPort, for instance. So compute, server, networking, and storage combined, especially in a centralized data center. And hyper-converged means that compute, storage, and memory are getting back to the local server as well. Nutanix, for instance, is such a solution in a hyper-converged infrastructure. I see quite some movement within my organization and interest in such a solution as Nutanix. And there are others as well in this space. There's a lot of development in the storage space. Appliances, look at the booth. There are, I think, 6 or 7 vendors at the TechEd booth covering storage appliances. Combination of SSD and memory and spinning disk or only memory. These types of solutions are very, very interesting in the VDI space as well. Deduplication and tiering, cool to see that Microsoft is making steps in that space with Server 2012 R2, for instance. GPU, graphical processor unit, sharing GPUs, virtualization of GPUs, pass-through of GPUs is very, very interesting. And you'll see these type of developments and the benefit of these developments that I can run 2D and 3D applications inside VDI for certain scenarios with their own price tag, but you can handle that type of workload. unified communications like Microsoft Link in VDI. And you see Microsoft entering the VDI space with Win 7, Win 8, Server 2012. Maybe you can say, well, Microsoft is it the first version of Microsoft in the VDI space? Well, the real answer is no, but the honest answer is yes. Because this version is available for LAN and WAN and wireless scenarios with good manageability, for instance. And the older versions were okay, but not brilliant, from my personal perspective. Other developments is HTML5 to access VDI instances. Reverse seamless means local applications, local Windows applications, being integrated in a central desktop. So reverse seamless is one of the features which are part of Zen Desktop 7, for instance, or third-party vendors like REST Software has that for the last 10 years. You see that VDI and server-based computing, so session host and virtualization host, are getting more and more converged. That's what you see within Microsoft. That's what you will see with Zen Desktop 7, for instance. And VDI overall is getting more and more mature. People understand what the impact is of VDI, what the benefits are, what the downsides are, what the cost perspective is. People understand how you can tune it. People understand storage. So it's getting more and more mature. And TCO is getting much better these days. From a storage perspective, storage is a big portion of the complete price tag on VDI. And it's interesting to see that storage tiering, deduplication, the essence of that is lowering the storage price impact for VDI. Well, I can spend, these are just random thoughts on my side. And you see that the application and desktop delivery space, and especially the VDI space, there's a lot of things are going on in the VDI stack. And that's cool to see. I will spend some time on the vendor space right now. Some people think, well, SmackDown is all about features and see a sort of pissing contest between vendors. And that's not my take on the VDI SmackDown. So the landscape of VDI solutions looks like this. These are the vendors I see in a certain degree in the VDI space. This has nothing to do with a Gartner Magic Quadrant kind of thing. This is just my graphical imagination where to place logos. So don't think that Oracle and Pano are the best solutions in the VDI space because they are in that, well, leaders quadrant. Well, that has nothing to do with this diagram. And by the way, Pano is not there anymore. They are gone. So I can remove that specific logo. Why this picture? To give you an understanding what type of vendors are in this space and my personal opinion about what vendors are the big ones and what are the smaller ones. And smaller doesn't mean not usable. That's not what I mean with smaller. What I see in my organization, in the community, talking with peers, is that Citrix and VMware are dominating this space. Microsoft, from my perspective, is not there at all from an implementation perspective. Just a majority of customers are using a Microsoft-only VDI solution. Yes, that is growing with 2012 and with 2012 R2, but today it is just a small percentage of customers using a Microsoft-only VDI, dominating by Citrix and VMware. Quest or Dell with vWorkspace, same sort scenario. Brilliant solution from a technology perspective, but I don't see them that often in production. Then it is quiet, and then you will see the others. Oracle, small from my perspective. 2X, Virtual Bridges, Ericom, Listec, Red Hat. Smaller set of customers, probably. I don't see that much movement. And that's being backed up by a survey we did from a Project VRC perspective in just asking what kind of solution are you using. These numbers I see at my customers and in the community reflect on the survey we did in November last year. Is it good or is it bad? Well, it gives you just a feeling what it is in this space right now. I see a lot of movement to Microsoft. On a monthly basis, I have 2 or 3 conversations with my customers, which have something like the following. I already pay for Citrix and for Microsoft and for VMware. I need to cut costs. I want to have a Microsoft-only solution as a starting point, and then I will see what will happen. Something like that. So there's a lot of attention to a Microsoft-only VDI solution from my customer set. If that is possible to build a VDI solution with Microsoft only, yes. But then it depends, okay, does it meet the requirements? I will explain that later. This is the question I received often. I've written down a VDI Smackdown. People think that I know everything, which is not true. People think, okay, this guy wrote an application virtualization Smackdown, a user environment management Smackdown, an enterprise mobility Smackdown. Let's Smackdown this guy and see what we can learn from him. So customers are hiring me for a couple of hours, couple of days, explain what they want to achieve, spend a couple of hours, I will present like a VDI Smackdown, and then they expect, okay, after 4 hours of workshop, we know which solution we should use. Oh, and that's not so easy, actually, because that's it depends. And my honest way to make a solution, to make a decision easy, is very simple. I have 1 euro coin here. You can use your, well, dime as well. It will work. And when you don't have any clue about requirements, just flip the coin, because that's the most honest way to determine what solution fits. And this is what I've done a couple of times at customers, really. And they thought, well, he is drinking mojito or whatever. Not sure what happens. But when you don't have a clue about requirements, just flip the coin is the easiest and honest way to make a decision. And I explained that when you don't have a clue about requirements, you have some homework to do. And that's what I've done at these customer sites. So it's about homework. And in the VDI Smackdown, there is homework, because I've written down 40 strategic questions you should answer up front. And that will give you or your colleagues an idea, okay, what's the direction we were heading to. And then you will have discussion about functions and features. And don't start with functions and features. So I have 30 minutes left for the VDI Smackdown, and that's exactly what I've planned. So I'm happy man. Well, I'm really happy man. I like this stage. It feels like a rock star stage, and to be honest. So happy that you showed up. Cool. I'll spend time on the VDI Smackdown. I will cover Citrix, VMware, and Microsoft. I won't cover Citrix VDI in a box. I won't cover Quest V Workspace. These are written down in the VDI Smackdown white paper. From a time perspective, I just remove these vendors. Not that they are not interesting. They are interesting. But from a time perspective, it's about making decisions. And Citrix, Microsoft, and VMware are the top vendors I have requests for my customers. So I will start with Citrix. And the structure is the following. I will start with the pros, then the cons, and then some additional information from Citrix, from Microsoft, and from VMware. So from a PQR perspective, not a Microsoft presenter perspective, from a PQR perspective, this is my vision around Citrix. And this is my feedback around Citrix. This is good. Their vision and their acquisitions are good when you look at enterprise mobility. VDI is a portion in enterprise mobility. Understand what the whole mobility space is. That's what the EMM, Enterprise Mobility Management Smackdown, is all about. Citrix is also about choice. FlexCast Management Architecture is actually the name of their new management platform in Desktop 7. It's about choice. I can have server-hosted desktops, session host, VDI. I can stream my complete image to rich clients. I have a client hypervisor, Type 1, Zen Client, Zen Client Enterprise, a very secure Zen Client, Zen Client XT. There's an upcoming client hypervisor, Type 2 hypervisor, which will run on Mac as well. And type 2 means an application being installed on OS X, like Fusion, like Hyper-V client, Hyper-V in Windows 8. Image management, from a VDI perspective, could be provisioning services, can be machine creation services. Both have their pros and cons. Choice also from a virtualization infrastructure and management perspective. Zen Server, Hyper-V, vSphere can be used. Choice also about remote display protocol. The remote display protocol from Citrix, HDX, or actually ICA, is able to handle client-side rendering. So, for instance, my Flash or my multimedia workload are actually, well, decoded on my client-side, or the complete content is being rendered on my server side, so server-hosted rendering. That's a choice as well. The benefit of client-side rendering is that my resources on the client side are being used. So when I have a thin client with certain resources, or a rich client or a tablet, I can use these resources to handle that, well, content. When I don't meet the requirements, for instance, a Flash player, I can have an automatic fallback to server-hosted rendering. That is an interesting approach. Remote FX and PCIe over IP are both server-hosted rendering from a remote display protocol perspective. 3D applications. Search for NVIDIA plus Citrix plus Synergy, for instance. 2 weeks ago, I was in Los Angeles. Big show around Zen Desktop and also about 3D resource-intensive applications. I have customers myself who are running big 3D applications in the Netherlands, in a data center, and presenting these applications, Autodesk Revit, for instance, to the Ukraine, to certain developers. Not just one or two developers, but 20, 25 developers, for instance. So 3D applications, delivering 3D resource-intensive applications is an interesting approach, good approach. Extensive endpoint support is important from a Citrix perspective. Integration with their gateway solutions is there. VDI assessment software is included. VDI assessment software is important when you design your VDI workload. I mentioned that customers have like 3 IOs and some customers have 50 IOs per user. Understand the application impact with VDI assessment software. Personal VDesk is a sort of hybrid approach between pooled and assigned desktops. Personal VDesk is, from a theory perspective, a good approach. The practical implementation, I see quite some challenges with the current version of Personal VDesk. There's a really big active community within Citrix and also outside Citrix. The downside of Citrix is there's no GPU sharing yet from a Zen desktop perspective. Challenging, there's a challenge or there's an attention point between client-side and server-hosted remote desktop protocol. So when I'm using client-side rendering, I have a really awesome and good user experience. But when it doesn't meet the requirements, for instance, a certain Flash player, then it will be server fallback, server-hosted rendering, which is okay and getting much better every new release, but the user experience can be different, so that's attention. Personal VDesk today is not image management. Yes, it is layering technology, but not managing these layers today. Zen Desktop 5.6 is way too complex when you look at all the different moving parts. And also, when you look at the amount of deployment solutions, it's way too much. It's MCS, it's PVS, it's PVD. It's Zen Client with their own synchronizer. It's way too complex. That's cool for consulting, but from an end-user perspective, it should be simpler. Attention is consoles, yes. Discussion for the last 20 years, something like that. And Edge Site, their end-to-end monitoring solution in Zen Desktop 5.6 is Edge Site from my perspective. When I add Edge Site, this will increase the amount of IOs really substantial. So understand the impact of Edge Site from a storage perspective. There is no integration from an infrastructure perspective between Zen Client and Zen Desktop. There is no integration in Zen Desktop and Zen App. Interesting to see that, well, Microsoft and Citrix are big friends, especially in competing VMware, which makes sense. But interesting to see that Zen Desktop, 5.6 Feature Pack 1, SCVMM 2012 SP1 does not work. That's really bad from my perspective. That will change over time, but right now, this keep this in mind. And with this version, there's no Win 8 support. So what's coming in Zen Desktop 7? You can talk for a couple of hours about Zen Desktop 7. I just created my own deck and spent 2 minutes on Zen Desktop 7. So what is Zen Desktop 7? No IMA anymore, but it's about FlexCast Management Architecture. And FlexCast Management Architecture in the first release will mean Zen App and Zen Desktop will be combined. So the same stack of management stack for Zen Desktop and Zen App. And Zen App is just a role, it's just a Zen Desktop App Edition is actually Zen App. And Zen App is just installing an agent on a session host machine. There are two consoles, one for IT support, and one for IT admins. Win 8 Server 2012 is supported. A complete new Edge site, yes, awesome. I see quite some demand for end-to-end monitoring solutions for VDI from my customers. Seamless local applications already covered in development stuff. Windows application refactoring. I can run legacy, quote-unquote, Windows applications and refactor these applications to mobile devices, non-Windows mobile devices, and make them, well, device-aware in some degree. So application refactoring is a solution to deliver Windows applications to mobile devices. Citrix application streaming is there, but there won't be further development on Citrix application streaming. So running Citrix application streaming is actually application virtualization, like FV and ThinApp. Different technology approach covered in the application virtualization SmackDown. But Citrix application streaming development is stopped. And Citrix will emphasize to move to FV and not to use application streaming in Win 8 or Win 8.1, for instance. That's not supported and doesn't work. So that's, in essence, the Citrix stack, Citrix portion of SmackDown. Now we'll spend time on the Microsoft side. Pros, cons, we'll talk about R2, we'll talk about third-party RDP clients. Customers say, well, Microsoft VDI, it is Microsoft, and we have a policy, it's Microsoft unless. I have quite some customers who have this policy. It's Microsoft unless. Is it good? Is it good enough? Well, go for it. And especially these days, not sure if that's typical in Europe, but customers are really looking forward in cutting down price. So is it good? Is it good enough? And when the answer is yes, go for it. Could be typical Dutch discussion, I'm not sure, but I think you'll have this type of discussion as well. The deployment of Microsoft VDI is simple, easy to deploy the roles, easy to manage the different roles from a central perspective. No SCVMM, System Center Virtual Machine Manager requirement, active connection broker, image management, so updating images, and especially in a pooled environment is really straightforward, simple. I'm not an admin. I'm a consultant, and actually I'm more a CTO than a consultant. I was a consultant. And I can, update my images pretty simple without, spending a whole week on training, that kind of stuff. Pooled VMs, I can use different storage scenarios. I can use local storage with SSD and spinning disks. I can use central storage. I can make different combinations with scale-out file servers. Interesting scenarios to solve and to implement VDI from a Microsoft perspective. RemoteFX is the first GPU sharing solution in the VDI space. I can add GPUs in my servers. Dell and HP, for instance, has these reference architectures explaining what that means for sizing, for instance. But RemoteFX is the first GPU sharing solution in the VDI space. That will change over time, especially with NVIDIA. There's a complete other discussion about NVIDIA and the impact of NVIDIA in VDI, but that's a little bit off topic. RemoteFX is the first GPU sharing solution. With RemoteFX, I have progressive display, media streaming, Remote effects over WAN, touch and modern UI support. In essence, which means good user experience on certain different types of devices in LAN and WAN and wireless environments. To prove that, two other community friends, Sean Bass and Bernard Rietsch, spent tons of time in evaluating remoting display protocols. Remote effects, PC over IP, HDX, different flavors, different content, like media, PDF, browsing, all that kind of stuff, and see what the impact is in 3G, WAN, LAN environments. I will cover later how you can find that kind of information. In the current version of RemoteFX, you can encode the content through GPU or CPU. In earlier versions of Microsoft VDI solution, it was GPU only, so you need a GPU in your server. In this release, you can use CPU or GPU, whatever you want. Understand the impact of, well, when the encoding process is done by CPU, can be, the impact can be pretty substantial, like 20, 25, 30% of CPU resources for that. Cluster shared volume is a read cache. There's one of the choices is to use cluster shared volume, and that's an interesting and good approach for VDI and storage in a Microsoft perspective. Hyper-V performs well. We've seen that in production, and is getting more and more mature, and is mature right now, and is growing. I see a lot of demand from current VMware customers inside our organization requesting feedback. Okay, what's the next step? Should we stick with VMware, or should we move to Hyper-V? That's a different workshop. I can use my Eurocoin as well, but you will need to write down the requirements of both platforms from a hypervisor VDI perspective, but also from a broader perspective. Now it gets nasty when I'm on stage at TechEd. And I did it as well at TechReady, their own internal event. And there are no tomatoes here and eggs, so I'm pretty safe. But I really believe in these sentences, otherwise I shouldn't present it. And my main one of the questions I have is Microsoft as organization, so not the RDS team, is Microsoft as organization really interested in VDI? I have doubts about that. And one of the things to prove my doubt is where is my service provider license agreement for VDI? There is not a service provider license agreement for VDI. Why not? Ask another time. I have some ideas, some feelings, and these are more just feelings than reality. But my feeling is that Microsoft as an organization have some other priorities to solve first. That doesn't mean that Microsoft VDI solution is not good. That's not what I mean. The solution is good and works. But it's about, okay, for instance, third-party support for RDP clients. Why is it not there yet? There are reasons for that, probably. Enterprise management functionality is one attention point. When you look at some other presentations, yesterday there was a session about, okay, performance, scalability on Microsoft VDI, 2,000, 5,000 concurrent users, check, tested it with login VSI, works. These are the numbers, this is how you configure it. But how you manage it is a different story. So managing a larger VDI implementation, more than 500 users, can be challenging from a GUI perspective. Then you need to use PowerShell, for instance. So keep that in mind. Remote effects is Hyper-V only. Important, I see this in every discussion I have with customers. There are actually two questions. When do we need to use Citrix? And what are the third-party clients for Microsoft for non-Windows clients? These are the big two questions in this type of discussion. Limited endpoint support. Where is the OS X client? Where is the Android client, for instance, to get all this goodness from Microsoft? Remote effects and graphical resource-intensive applications. That is not the design goal of remote effects. The design goal of remote effects is to bring a flawless a brilliant user experience for, well, call it normal users, line of business applications, browsing applications, using applications, office applications, browsing on the internet, not using 3D intensive applications. That's not the design goal from my perspective in Microsoft VDI. User profile disk as a solution to solve user profiles, user profile discussion. I have some doubts about user profile disk in the current implementation. I see a storage impact on user profile disk. And user profile disk is, for instance, limited to collections. When I have a scattered environment, multiple collections, VDI and session host, use user experience virtualization, part of MDOP, or an other user environments solution. Again, look at unified communications in the Microsoft context. Yes, Link 2013 is supported and works in this scenario. Ask about the context. What is the context that it works? And what is the context that it is supported? Understand that RemoteFX has a price tag as well. The big benefit and the most important reason is that it has brilliant user experience. But the price tag, adding GPUs to a server, for instance, has a price tag for each VM. That is how much users you can run on a GPU is covered in the other session during TechEd, for instance. Shadowing is not there. Process scaling from a central console is not there. IT admins will request that kind of functionality to support users. Guest OS and client OS support is there, and especially client OS support for RDP 8 is, from my perspective, limited. I will cover that later. Understand that RemoteFX is not meant for OpenGL, big OpenGL applications. The current implementation of OpenGL is 1.1. It's like old school stuff. Custom RDP properties created by IT admins are not saved in a database, which means they can be lost. That is just a small portion, it's not a big one, but this is something to keep in mind. My feedback to the product group is the documentation of the solution, some PowerShell commandlets, for instance, or the documentation as a whole is lacking. It's not brilliant. It is not there yet. And it should be about, well, I think it's good to have profound and solid documentation also from a Microsoft VDI perspective. Universal Access Gateway in remote app is a no-go. Search for that. When you're using Universal Access Gateway and remote app, is a no-go. One slide about Server 2012 RT VDI related and Server 2012 RT non-VDI related. So in R2, shadowing is back. And it works for shadowing works with multi-monitors, works with remote app. It's a one-to-one connection. So I as an RT admin can shadow one user. The feedback I received is that RemoteFX in an updated version will have serious performance increase. We'll see what Sean and Benny will think about that and see how that works. But it's a good thing that there's time spent on optimizing RemoteFX. The Remote Desktop Protocol application is optimized. So thumbnail preview, live taskbar, arrow peak, the things you normally do with use with Windows 8 as well, are valid and are implemented for remote applications. When do you reconnect in a 3G environment? It could take up to 30 seconds before it's reconnected. And that will change with the R2 release of Server 2012. You will see that it will reconnect in, for instance, 10 seconds instead of 30 seconds. Generation 2 VMs is one of the changes in Hyper-V. We'll see what that means for the guest OSs, what type of guest OSs are supported. But Generation 2 VMs will be part of the solution. And the feedback we received is that the performance impact will be 20 10 to 20% lower when you use this type of VM configurations. Quality of service from an I/O perspective is you can set quality assurance on an I/O perspective with Hyper-V. So you can say, okay, this VM for Mint is able to consume 20 IOPS maximum, and then it's being gapped. And the VM of Ruben can handle 2 IOPS, for instance. You can set these type of settings with quality assurance on the Hyper-V perspective. Storage spaces covered in the keynote, tiered storage, so using SSD and SAS drives, automatically tiered. We'll see what the impact is. Write-back cache. We'll see what the impact is. I've just written down these topics because these are important for VDI. I didn't have my hands-on experience today with the R2, so I couldn't spend time in really investigating what the performance impact is. We'll do over time. Last topic in this Microsoft segment is the question, okay, what RDP client, what third-party RDP client can we use for non-Windows clients? So I'm on track to use Microsoft-only VDI, but my customers have Windows clients, but also MacBooks or other devices. It's a hybrid world. Microsoft, wake up. It's not a Microsoft-only world. So we spent some time in third-party RDP client investigation. We investigated these third-party RDP clients. Our findings overall is to find, it was tough to find details, which RDP version, so 7, 7.1, 8, 8.1, or older RDP versions, are supported by these clients. What type of functionality is supported by these clients? Is RD Gateway supported? Is Universal Access Gateway support? Is RemoteFX supported? Some of these vendors have an in-app payment. So I buy this application for a certain amount of money. And when you want to enable, for instance, RD Gateway, you need to buy additional features from that application. And some of these vendors cost around $30 per device. That is a list price. I'm pretty sure that when you buy thousands of these clients, the price will be different. But I just mentioned the list price here. Our findings in 3D third-party RDP clients for OS X, mobile platforms, iOS, Android, BlackBerry, Windows Phone, it's too expensive. They are lacking in functionality. It is nice for IT pros. It's not user-friendly, for instance. And the documentation is immature and tough to find details. So I'm not impressed by third-party RDP clients. I don't say it doesn't work. Some solutions will work with, for instance, older RDP versions. Spend time in reading the VDI SmackDown and understand what third-party clients are offering. I'm not impressed so far with the third-party RDP clients. Best client I've seen so far is ITAP. ITAP is around $30 per device, which is still not bad when you compare it to Citrix, adding Citrix pure for a third-party client perspective. But adding $30 per device, and I have 32 devices at home, so it will be pretty expensive, is part of the conversation. You'll find the details in the VDI SmackDown 2.1. It's released last week, so you'll find these results. Other one in the Microsoft stack is a RemoteFX monitor. Dell is creating this monitor. You can contact Michel Rode. He is the PM of vWorkspace. I'm not sure when this RemoteFX monitor will be released. It won't be long. From a time perspective. But RemoteFX monitor is helpful in finding the impact of RemoteFX. Network perspective, what type of functionality is enabled, that kind of stuff. So RemoteFX monitor, when you want to get your hands on the RemoteFX monitor, contact Michel or contact me and see what we can do. Or just wait a certain amount of time before it's released publicly. By the way, my opinion is that Microsoft should build this in the solution and not just... Yes, you can get this kind of information from performance monitor, but you should have this type of monitor just to make it life much simpler. I have around 5 minutes left, and I need 5 minutes for the VMware's portion. So VMware SmackDown, what is good about VMware VDI? Their vision and communication is clear since 5.0, since a year and a half. VMware is a solid name in the virtualization space, in the data center space. AppV and ThinApp are the two major application virtualization solutions in this space. ThinApp is a solid solution, works really well for my customers in their production environments. Their image management, link cloning, is easy and strong. It's easier than Citrix image management solution, for instance. They have hardware accelerated 3D graphics. You can use a partner, Teradici, to offload PC over IP, so from CPU to this Teradici offloading card. PC over IP is doing well in LAN and WAN environments. Proof, check Sean and Benny's presentation. I will cover that briefly later. UPM, user profile management, or persona management. Profile management is part of the solution. CBRC, or VSA, Vue Storage Accelerator, is part of the vSphere stack. Vue Storage Accelerator is a read cache, an in-memory cache. Win8 is supported. The benefit, it's login from a VMware perspective. I don't see that as a benefit from an outsider's perspective as a consultant. Attention point is impact of PC over IP remote display protocol from a server side, as I mentioned as well from a remote effects perspective. UPM, user profile management, or persona management, is profile management only. Understand user environment management. Search for UEM SmackDown. You will understand what user environment management is. Profile management is a portion of user environment management. Getting secure access from a client perspective, from a user perspective, to the view environment can be challenging because certain ports need to be open to get access via PC over IP to this VDI instance. I've seen scalability and manageability issues in larger environments, 20,000, 30,000 seat deployments. And the answer on that is, okay, we will create pods of 4,000 desktops, and then we will create a new pod, a new pod, a new pod, which is okay, but from a management perspective, can be better. HTML5, their BLAST protocol, is really basic. So using, for instance, Chrome or IE or Firefox to access this desktop instance via HTML5 works, but is really basic. No USB support, not really. It's okay as a backup plan, something like that. So what about the others? What about Quest? What about Citrix? What about Red Hat? I should add a half an hour for that. I won't do that. The others are covered in the VDI SmackDown. A couple of minutes left to summarize a little bit of things, but also to give you some other information for homework. So what are ingredients for success? And I thought, well, I'm in the US. I like to barbecue. This looks delicious to me. In Holland right now, it's finally summer. Whole family is barbecuing. I'm here in New Orleans, sweating pants, and no barbecue for me. That's always challenging. But ingredients for success with VDI are the following. So what are the ingredients? Is focus on the end user and their scenarios. We call it persona. Write down their personas. Persona is context, location, security, device, application, device. And you will see that in every organization, you will have 5 to 15 different personas. Understand your complete desktop strategy and have focus on desktop strategy. Focus on user experience. I've spent some time on user experience and perceived performance. Understand what that means for end users. Do reality checks and your own proof of concepts. Don't rely only on what vendors say. Also PQR as a vendor, do your own testing. Understand storage. I spent 20 minutes around storage for VDI. So understand storage. This was just the starting point. And don't focus instantly on features, for instance, covered in the VDI Smackdown. That's a bad approach. And then just do it. This is my tagline. Some people will follow me on Twitter. Sometimes it's just do it. Don't complain, don't whine, just do it, and then do it. So these were the four objectives and takeaways for this session. 10 points to implement VDI correctly, storage design for VDI, developments in application and desktop delivery, and then smack down the VDI solutions. I really hope I met these objectives and met your expectations. And before you leave, I've created something special. I've created an email, and when you send me an email with a subject called Go VDI or something else what makes me laugh, that's fine as well. Send me an email, Go VDI as subject, to rsp@pqr.nl. You will receive this email. And in this email, there are around 20 different blog articles, as I mentioned, to Sean and Benny, or to the VDI Smackdown, or to the UEM Smackdown, or to other, other blog and white paper articles. I think this email for you or for your colleagues will be a great starting point in the VDI strategy and very helpful in the further roadmap of VDI in your organization. Well, with that, I really hope you liked this session. It's a combination of maybe generic, deeper dive, not too deep. When you have deeper questions, other questions, let me know. Fill in the evaluation forms. When you have feedback where I can improve, let me know. I'm happy to talk about it. I'm happy to talk about the topics you have. Afterwards, I will close the presentation, walk away, and we'll have plenty of time this afternoon in answering questions. I want to thank you again for your attendance, and have a great day.